This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name is Andrew Aldridge. I'm partner and head of marketing at Deepbridge Capital. The aim of these Deepbridge Discovery podcasts is to bring to life Deepbridge, our people, our investments, and the people behind those investments. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues Tory Bray and Mike McWilliam as we take a look under the bonnet of Deepbridge and why we do what we do. So guys, I'd just like it if you could briefly introduce yourselves, kind of what you do at Deepbridge and your backgrounds, please. Mike, should I start with you?
Deepbridge, I look after Scotland, Northern Ireland for Deepbridge on the business development, the sales side, and have been doing that for 8 and a bit years now. So one of the first ones in the gate at Deepbridge, and I'm still here.
We still can't get rid of you.
Can't get rid of me, no. I'm clinging on, just north of the wall. I've been in the industry, financial services, for 30 plus years. So I've seen a lot of changes, not only to myself, but to the industry. And I've been through a few companies, not too many, some big organizations, ran a company myself, and been on both sides of the fence, the distribution side into primarily IFAs, and was a broker for a short space of time and jumped back over the fence again. So bit of experience, as I said, primarily through Scotland and Northern Ireland, but got plenty of contacts through the rest of the UK.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. And Tory, can you just introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky BDMs that gets to run Deepbridge's London and Southeast areas. I've not got nearly as much experience in the field as Mike does.
Thank God. Thank God for that.
I know. I'd look great if I did. You can pick that up.
Is that a compliment?
Take it as you wish, Mike. So I've worked for Deepbridge for, I think, over 2 years now. Obviously joined at quite a funny time. But, just getting the experience where I can. I sort of fell into this industry by chance and luckily enjoying where I fell.
Excellent. Good. So, kind of what was your background before Deepbridge then?
So I got a degree in drama and acting and didn't
Which
really
is very,
know where
very
I was going
useful
from
when
there.
You're talking to IFAs. Excellent. Good.
Yeah. All essential.
Absolutely.
Definitely worth the money. So then from that, after not succeeding in my acting career, just taking jobs here and there, falling into admin jobs, realizing like customer facing roles were always quite good, and just made the right friends in the right places. And that's how Deepbridge and I came across each other, and it sort of just worked from there.
Great. Well, it's good to have you on board. So, kind of Tory, I guess, kind of being relatively new to the industry, et cetera, what have you found kind of particularly interesting, or kind of why do you enjoy working kind of in the sector that we do?
Well, I won't lie and say the tax side of things, but especially at Deepbridge, just learning. My favorite thing has been all the companies that we work with, just like learning about so many different things and getting excited about them all, and then being able to get advisors excited about them all, and knowing that they're then getting the potential investors excited about them all. It's just like a really good chain of events that's happened. That's the thing I find most interesting about it, and it's what's sort of kept me interested. And it's sort of the like when I find myself drifting from something else, I'll just like go back and look at what companies we've got and what can I go back to someone and get them excited about next. That's sort of my main favorite part.
Excellent.
Like.
That's great. I think when I remember several years ago when Ian Warwick and I were chatting about kind of what we wanted Deepbridge to be and kind of how we wanted to go about talking about our products, and I think the word we both used at the time was about passion. So that's great to see that we're still doing that many years later. Mike, kind of same question to you then about kind of what kind of interests you about this side of the industry.
Well, I'd had a background in for a few years with a couple of biggish companies, Clerical Medical International and Scott Life International, but that was primarily on inheritance tax planning, trusts and bonds, offshore bonds. So I'd had a sort of flavour of purely the tax planning aspect, so just structural. And again, that was distribution to IFAs, and that was probably around and about the early 90s, mid 90s, and that felt as it feels sort of now with jumping into the tax efficient investments that we're doing, which is a different animal altogether. And I think what I enjoy about the where I am with DeepBridge is it's not changed from the first time I met Mr. Warwick, was that I realized pretty quickly that I wasn't joining a financial services company.
Absolutely. I
was joining a company that was a business building company. And that was the prime target. All the other bits and pieces around about it, the tax, were just icing on the cake. And when you stripped away BIS and all the other labels we have for what we do, underneath was really, really exciting opportunities for investment. And I hadn't had that in the industry. It was primarily product pushing. So it was a pension, it was a bond, it was an ISA. They were just products. Whereas what we're doing is we're looking, we strip away the tax planning aspect, and we actually are dealing with really, really exciting, cutting edge UK innovation, which in terms of it's polar opposites from financial services normally. So that's why still at this stage, like an ancient scroty age, I'm still pretty excited about getting up at 2:30 in the morning. No, getting up in the morning and actually going out there and seeing brokers. It's tough. And Tori, we've talked about this before. It's hard work doing what we do. This is because of the patient capital review and where we've come from. We've come out the other side of that as one of the leaders in EIS and tax efficient investment. So it's early stage. It's still early stage, and we are almost turning a super tanker in terms of the advice the IFAs are giving to get them to look at EIS as part of their overall package for delivering advice to clients.
But I guess, Mike, for you, the kind of the commonality across what you've ever done is that you effectively work as a problem solver for IFAs. You work with IFAs. You mentioned that historically it's kind of product pushing, but I guess you've always had that element of the client or the advisor's got a problem and you've got a solution to that, and working with them to make sure they've got the best advice.
I guess that what we used to do, what we still do now, is we sell innovation, we sell solutions to problems. So on one side you have the tax solutions, and then on the other side you've got the investment solutions as well. So if clients, IFAs are coming to us for with an issue, with a problem, we can pretty much solve most, if not all, of the, can I call it, run-of-the-mill day-to-day income, capital gains and inheritance tax issues that a client would have with
absolutely
what we've got. So we solve problems, absolutely do that on a day-to-day basis, but it's the underlying investments that are the really, really, and I think, Tori, you touched on that. That's really exciting stuff. You do all the other bits and pieces with other EISs, but what you can do is what we do.
And Mike, I guess when we first met and first started talking, this was pre-patient capital review, and we talked about kind of where DeepBridge could fit in the market. And I think the key thing that we both identified was that there are so many people out there talking about the tax reliefs, talking about income tax, CGT, inheritance tax, but nobody was talking about what people would or could be investing in. And I guess, is that kind of thing a sea change that you've seen?
When we sat down pre-patient capital review, what we were up against in the industry was a balance sheet. It was a pound and 30 pence back and a pound and a penny back after three years.
A pound and a penny if you were lucky.
That's another story altogether. But that's what we were up against. We were the only one, but we were certainly one of the forerunners to actually doing what EIS was originally put in place to do. Everything else was pseudo, was cobbled together. We sort of knew that things were going to change. There was going to be a line in the sand drawn by HMRC and just say, enough's enough. We're not going to be doing this anymore. We're not funding asset back. So we knew there was going to be an opportunity. When we came through that and out the other side, the opportunity has arisen. I guess what we always thought was the optimist ever in us was it was going to be a quicker turn. But actually what happened was that the industry almost shut down at that point because they were so used to doing asset-backed animals that it was a whole sea change. So there's the hard work, there's the difficulty for us to get out in front of those IFAs that used to use this and actually change their mind. And, that's a challenge, but we've got the product, the structure to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think it's been changing that language, hasn't it, over the last few years, you know, kind of talking about venture capital, talking about investee companies, etc. It's not just in and out, penny and a pound and a penny back, as you said. And Tori, kind of, you know, looking at kind of the IFAs that you work with, and you know, kind of looking at the market over the last couple of years, kind of why do you believe that IFAs and investors should be considering EIS, tax efficient investments, etc., potentially more commonly than they are?
I think I tend to start my conversations with IFAs trying to not talk solidly about the tax reliefs, and this because most of them already know that and understand that and think that they have the idea of the risks involved in that, and you come to that later. I try and get them excited about just adding these kinds of investments to their portfolio for the clients. So it's so rare that you get to put your money into a startup company that you can have so much information on, like especially what we do, where we've got so much intel in the companies as they are and know everything about them inside and out. And it gives the investor something exciting to talk about what they're getting involved in, what they're putting their money in. It's not just about what returns are you getting and what's this and that. It's like getting something more out of it and knowing that you're helping the economy and you're helping these British businesses in the long run. I think it's such an easier way in of understanding what it is you're doing, and you can put your money in anything these days, but what's the point if you can't get excited about it and talk about it and see what your money's doing? And so I think off the back of it, that's more what I tend to lead in with. Everyone's got tax liability, everyone's got this and that. So it's where we're special and where EIS makes it such a more interesting type of investment to get into.
Absolutely. I think there was a good few years ago, there's an IFA who described it to me as the golf club moment. And he said basically what he loves about kind of what we do and, you know, the understanding his clients have of their investments is that when they're sat in the golf club on a Saturday afternoon or whatever it is, they're talking to their friends about, oh, I'm invested in this bit of tech or this new novel idea, etc. You know, he said, you know, they don't do that about their pensions or they don't do that about kind of their mainstream investments, but kind of where we're investing, it's kind of that excitement, that passion that they can share with their friends and their peers, effectively.
Absolutely. I feel like we're in a state of life where the internet has obviously made everything so accessible to everyone, and you want to know the ins and outs of everything, and now, like, we are literally giving investors the easiest access to their investments at all. So I think it's great on all fronts in that sense.
And always, always as part of a portfolio, of course. It's not just investors going off their own back and just picking a random company to invest in. Mike, kind of, I guess, similar question to you. I mean, you know, you and I have talked quite a lot about kind of why we think advisors should be looking at these things more commonly. We're not saying every investor should be doing this, but actually it should be more of a common theme. And kind of what's your take on that?
The guys I'm seeing sort of fall into three camps, as you would probably think. There is those that embrace it, understand it, and use it on a very regular basis. There's those that know what it is, but really, really want to get involved in it. So there's a bit beyond that, and there's those then other IFAs who have a perception of EIS that is, it's high risk, and it's definitely not for any of my clients. And I think the bulk of the guys I'm dealing with, the bulk of, fall into the latter two categories. And that's where the development is about understanding around EIS and where and how it should be used. So the guys that are already doing it and already feel really comfortable about EIS, they'll have a conversation with most of their clients about EIS as they call it the third silo, the third tax silo. There's ISA, pension, and then EIS. And it's actually having that, their ability to just bring it into the conversation, introduce the idea to a brand new client, which is, that works in so many different levels. And it's just what Tori was saying about the part of the portfolio that is really, really exciting. It might be the smallest part of the portfolio, but we can lift a lid on absolutely every single company that the investor is investing into. The other two categories that I mentioned, that's where I think probably the biggest slug is in that middle slug, where they sort of know they should be doing stuff with EIS, they should be engaging in it, but do I have the time, the inclination, and really how do I position this as part of my overall investment criteria?
So is that a confidence thing then?
Totally, absolutely totally. EIS has been here for more than 25 years. The tax breaks have been there. The drive that the UK government have given. I mean, we've had changes of government, changes of colour in the government as well. It's still here. EIS, yep. And we've talked about this. EIS is going to be here for a while. It actually might get even more generous. That might happen in the next few years, just to get us away from the post-COVID pandemic and move business forward. But where these guys find huge amount of issue with getting to grips with this is obviously time, training and understanding. So I think it's up to, part of my job is to actually go out there and position it as a simple animal, a simple part of the overall portfolio. De-risk it, de-risk the actual, kind of call it product or strategy, and give them the tools to be able to go in and talk to their clients about how do we actually position this in about an overall portfolio. Because you've got to look at the holistic side of it, the overall side of what a portfolio looks like. You can't just isolate EIS, pension, and ISA. It's got to be part of an overall, which then if you do embrace that, it then becomes a small sliver of an overall portfolio, which you look in terms of the overall portfolio, and it's a tiny part of it.
But so, I guess it's about doing it regularly rather than just as a standalone one-off investment. It's about regularly
every single review that the IFA is sitting in, going into to a client. Annual review, we were talking to the chaps around the table the other day, IFAs that are utilising EIS, and they are introducing the idea of an EIS to their clients every single review, whether it's twice a year, once a year, four times a year, whatever it is, they talk about EIS as just part of the norm. So my great, again, we've talked about this, is to normalise EIS. So it's just part and parcel of what IFAs do. The last one is those IFAs that just will not, they're not for turning, and they just don't want to embrace it. I think that potentially that side will just die out. There's more and more IFAs wanting to understand and embrace EIS. So I think there is a huge opportunity for.
I guess there's client demand there as well. I mean, it's we've seen various things from the FCA kind of looking at kind of the growth in terms of crowdfunding, cryptocurrency, online investing, you name it. You know, there's various things out there. So I guess client demand is going to be pushing advisors towards these kind of things. I mean, again, I was talking to an IFA recently who was saying that, one of the reasons why he was so keen to make sure EIS was part of his regular discussions was because if he didn't, his clients would be going off and, crowdfunding and just picking random companies here and there. So he kind of loses that control and that insight.
Yeah, and if you think about that overall holistic approach that more and more IFAs, way more IFAs are taking, they're not just order taking anymore, they are looking at the overall portfolio that clients got and how is that going to, and when is it going to say affect or fund their retirement or other events along the way. And EIS is fitting in with that to try to normalize that overall. Yeah, it's potentially being driven by their clients, but it's them having to take that step, that leap of faith into and properly understanding EIS and introducing the notion to the client. Because the clients that are should have EIS, Stacey, you mentioned it, not every client should. Every client should at least be discussed about. I mean, clients that are of a certain level, pension pots are running well, ISAs are running well, but there is an extra demand over and above for, can I call it venture capital, and venture capital being introduced into the portfolio.
And I guess, Tori, are you seeing that as well with your advisors and those kind of more proactive advisors, that they're looking at kind of regular investing in EIS, etc.?
Certainly, yeah. I've got a couple of clients that have spoken to me in talks still about like clients. They've got a large number of clients who are maxing out their pensions and wanting something a bit different to go into. So yeah, there's definitely it's there. It's definitely there for everyone to find a way to utilize. Honestly, it's even I'm seeing it and I'm feeling very new. I've not got like many. So you're not
as
there.
New as you think, Tori, these days, you know. It's you know.
I still feel it.
soon you'll be grey haired like Mike, and you know, that's when we know we've
got to some point. I'm black.
That's a choice.
Absolutely. So guys, I guess just talking about kind of why DeepBridge, a bit of ego boost for us here in terms of, you know, why DeepBridge. You've both worked in the tax efficient space before. Tori, kind of what do you kind of think makes DeepBridge a bit special, or why do you enjoy kind of working at DeepBridge?
So for me, when I started DeepBridge, I also started a brand new part of my career. I'd never worked in sales before and was never so involved in the nitty-gritty parts of what the tax efficient space is at all. And so it's been amazing to see that I joined at such a tricky time as well. So just before the pandemic. And what I've loved about what DeepBridge has done for me is really supported me and held my hand through like trials and tribulations of COVID, trying to see each other where we can, but also just getting that support. I also just love the feel of the fact that it still feels like a very small family-based company, but we're getting so much bigger now. And that feeling is still there. And I think at the core of it, it's what makes DeepBridge so, it's what makes me want to stay, and it's what makes me want to work hard for you guys, and it's what definitely entices me, and that's enough ego boosting for you.
Nothing to do with me, but I think that's what when we talk to our long-standing IFAs, you know, we've got IFAs who've worked with us for 9-10 years, etc. You know, that's kind of the feedback we get from them, is they enjoy working with us. I think, you know, Mike and I were somebody the week, and he said, look, you know, as well as we love what you're investing in, we love what you talk about and the kind of companies, etc., you know, people buy people. It's got to be, you know, you've got to have that right feel with the people you're working with.
Absolutely. It's really nice to be able to represent the company that does that and makes people feel that way, and it's nice to be a part of that, and it's definitely great.
So Mike, kind of again, you know, you've been around the block, as you've suggested before, if you don't mind me saying that, but you know, kind of why DeepBridge, and kind of why do you think this is the good fit?
I joined DeepBridge because the guys that were kicking it off were business builders. That was a completely different feel for me. So even at this stage in my career, you've seen pretty much everything that's got to be seen, crashes and ups and bubbles bursting and all sorts. But you look at what DeepBridge has achieved in 8-9 years, and it's an absolutely phenomenal journey that we've been on. But we're all, like Tori says, it still feels like a small company. We all know each other. The guys on the top, the guys that are actually driving the business are, as I said, business builders. So it doesn't feel like a financial services company. Every time I go out to, and we've not been out too much over the last couple of years, but prior to that, when we were doing seminars and we saw our peer group, I don't think there's anybody else like DeepBridge out there that's providing what we provide. So it's an exciting company to be with. There's still, I guess, a long way to go in the journey, and it's great to be part of that. It's great to be part of the sales team. That's what I get out of bed in the morning to do, is to promote DeepBridge in Scotland and Northern Ireland and anywhere else that we turn up. So to be part of that is hugely exciting, and I can't see it stopping. It's just going to keep going.
You see, I thought you got out of bed in the morning because nature called, Mike. I thought that was mainly at your age, but, you know.
I've got plastic sheets, but...
I think, and yeah, what you're saying, I think extends well beyond just the DeepBridge team. Our advisor community we work with, I don't think there's many places where I'd expect the barrage of text messages from IFAs reminding me that my football team's crap. That's one of the beauties of kind of the close knit kind of community we've got, which is great to see. So I guess kind of looking forward, Mike, kind of what are your hopes or objectives kind of next 12, 36 months?
The pacemaker continues to do its job.
That's a tick.
Snip. I think that, again, I keep going about how exciting a time to be with DeepBridge. I suppose at any particular time along the 8 years I've been with DeepBridge, you could have said it's been an exciting time, but the industry and this side of the fence and the industry we're in, it's changing all the time. As we were alluding to earlier, more and more of our, can I call it, customers, the IFA fraternity, are becoming more and more comfortable with EIS and the tax planning aspects, whether it's EIS or business relief. So the opportunity for DeepBridge and everybody with DeepBridge is huge. So really excited about, and also the changes that will happen with DeepBridge as well. This new product, this new structure, there's new people coming on board. So I can only see a great future for all of us in DeepBridge.
Tori, what about yourself?
So the next 12 to 36 months, or however you phrased it, for me, I'm hoping to just get the ball rolling back into in-person events and face-to-face meetings, and just trying to get things going and really making a name for myself within DeepBridge, and really just wanting to spread the word and to just see where it takes us, really. That's all I'm really hoping for myself in a selfish way.
I think also, like you said, it's been a very interesting 2 years since you joined us. So I guess that kind of face-to-face meetings, getting out in front of people, must be extremely exciting for you.
It feels brand new, even though we touched on it a bit at the start, but then obviously pandemic and everything that went on with that. So getting back to face-to-face, real-life, actual people is definitely really exciting for me, yeah.
Excellent. Well, if anybody's listening who's based in the southeast, Tori wants to come out for meetings.
Dying for a meeting.
Yeah. It's latte, is that right? Is that what you want when you're going for coffee? Is that kind of,
yes, please, coconut latte.
Excellent. Good. So kind of just, kind of wrapping up, I think, one of the things that I'm looking for over the next 12 to 36 months, I guess, is that, our portfolio is really at an exciting point now. I think we've got some really maturing companies. So I guess, I'm looking forward to you guys being out to your guys with some really exciting news about some of the exits and some of the co-funding we're attracting now, which is a phenomenal place to be in. Kind of looking at you guys personally, on these podcasts, we try and give people a bit of a flavour of the individuals we're talking to, not just with the work hat on. Tori, kind of away from the office, kind of what floats your boat?
Well, no, I try and spend as much free time as I can with my family and friends. I feel like, especially now where I've had so much time where I couldn't see them for whatever reason, so I really just try and, not in like a crazy socialized way, but just like spending time with people I love. I've had a newfound love for the gym and a healthy lifestyle, you'd be pleased to know. And I think above all, my favorite thing to do is, based on my background and my degree and stuff, I love live theatre, I love comedy shows and everything that goes into it, even films and stuff, and I'll watch documentaries on how they're made. That's what I really love at the moment. I really just like seeing the production of everything and then watching the final product.
Excellent. I wish I shared your love of the gym, but anyway, that's for another day. But
not for everyone.
Mike, what about yourself? What's away from the office? Kind of what?
I guess that, and this is a bit like Tori. I love music. Last 2 years, not been able to play in a band, so we've been cooped up, and we're just getting back into the studio, start rehearsals, and see if we can't get back out on and playing live gigs. So that should be brilliant. I always loved getting into the gym. I've joined a boxing gym, which is the Livingston Amateur Boxing, and it's a very industrial place where everybody has tattoos, including everybody, girls and chaps. I'm the only one tattooless in the entire place, and it's a really good.
Are you thinking about changing that? Are you kind of getting the itch?
No. My fear of needles. I was going to throw in a small prick would not. I just fall over. So no. So music, boxing now, which is great fun. Obviously, spending a bit of time with family. We had the lockout from my two sons are a bit older, so they're away from home. So that was pretty tough not being able to see them quite a lot. So it's nice to get back into that family mix.
Good. And then last question for you. So if we were hosting the Deepbridge dinner party, which three guests would you invite to dinner, excluding family and friends? We don't want to offend anybody. Whether dead or alive, who would you invite? Tori?
Three people I would like to come to a dinner. I've always said this for any question. Frank Sinatra is my guy. I'd love to just hear stories and have a little sing song, and yeah, just think that would be amazing. I read autobiography of his not too long ago, and I was just fascinated, and I just was like, yeah, I need to meet him. He needs to be
and you're after dinner entertainment sorted, so that's good.
Exactly.
Yep.
Free. Someone else I find really interesting and would love to just listen to talk the whole time would be David Attenborough.
Okay. Yep.
Also would be in fear that he could talk to me and I'd just like fall into a lovely sleep because I find his voice so relaxing.
Excellent.
And for my third, I'm going with a comedian because it can't just be me. Rob Beckett is my favourite comedian at the moment.
Okay.
The stand-up from South London, and I just find him so easily funny and so just like so many people I've grown up with, and I read his biography recently and I just find his life fascinating. So yeah, I'd love to just like have a chat and a drink with him.
Good. Yeah. No, I think that's a good, well-rounded rounded
I think
group.
It's very diverse for me.
It is.
All walks of life.
Three white blokes. Yeah, very diverse.
Oh, yeah, very diverse.
And Mike, what about yourself?
Vlad the Impaler, Billy Connolly, Paul Rogers, and Winston Churchill, probably.
Okay, interesting. Any kind of rationale behind?
No, the ones I've got addresses for.
Excellent, good. Well, the restraining order, I'm sure, is in the post, but that's good. Well, thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate your time. What we want to do with these podcasts is really kind of give a flavour to people about Deepbridge, what we invest in, the people behind Deepbridge. So really appreciate your time. So thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Tori.
Yeah, it's been great.
Thank you for joining us for this latest Deepbridge Discovery podcast. If you have any topics or subject matters you'd like us to discuss in future episodes, then please drop us a line at discovery@deepbridgecapital.com. This podcast was brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.